Madam Chair. No problem. We'll make our way through a few minor scratches. I'm sure that's not a big issue. Just to perhaps get everybody onto the line of thought again, the Certificated Natural Scientist section was split last year by the Council into two levels, a level A and a level B, in order to make it possible for people to register that have had qualifications, particularly in the previous system, that may not be quite up to completely the level that we would be requiring. By comparison, oh, whatever you did, well done, Madam Chair. It's your magnetic personality, I'm sure. Level A previously has always been, recognized as a, Certificate of Natural Sciences Level A, need a qualification, a recognized three-year national diploma or three-year bachelor's degree or equivalent thereof, with a minimum of 1 year work experience. We then introduced a Certificate of Natural Sciences Level B, who requires a 2 or 3 year national diploma or an equivalent thereof, followed by 3 years of work experience or 5 years of work experience, depending on the qualification. And that has led to enabling quite a number of people who now come on board. And I think it's also part of our philosophy of being an enabling council in order to make it possible for people to advance who may not have always had the opportunity to get the education from day scratch, but as they move along in their careers have made great strides and will probably or hopefully move even further into the future. It's a very important part. That's spooky. A very important part of the way we conduct our business. Now, particularly at level B, the very, very strict requirement that the council has for the basic sciences are not to be considered as a prerequisite for registration at this level. Now, as I say before, it is had, particularly from agricultural colleges and places like that, enabled people to join the fold and advance their career in that way. Now, why should one want to register? Well, first of all, recognition is very important in any professional's career. Recognition by peers, and in our case we recognize and back from an unbiased council perspective a potential candidate, and it plays an important role as well in terms of recognition by the public, and slowly but surely we are gaining ground there. I know, for example, there was a recent meeting in Randburg where they needed some environmental assessments before they could move ahead with the project, and people from the public insisted that it be a professionally registered person who do that work and not anybody else, and I think that was very encouraging, and it's something that we would like to encourage further on. It impacts on the quality of the work as well. So yes, why register? You can enjoy a professional state. And very, very important as well is that by registering as a professional, you also become part of the people that protect and strengthen the profession. And the medical profession is as strong as it is because the medical profession strengthens itself as it goes along. And I don't see any reason why scientists should not do something similar. I mean, the stronger the profession it is, the better for everybody. Then there is, of course, the legal requirement. No work identified under the Act may be done by persons who are not registered with SACNASP. But that is not something that we are trying to enforce rigorously at this stage. We believe that by making people realize the importance of registration, we're going to go a longer way. The legal aspects can follow later. And particularly for some audiences, it's required for occupational specific dispensation in the government. And it creates some problems. OSD was created probably without consulting widely enough. And consequently, there are some scientists that are in positions that they shouldn't be, or people that should be in positions and are not because they're not registered. And we're addressing them on a department by department basis. Yesterday we had a meeting with Aquaculture and see how to best accommodate these matters. Now, this is probably not directly relevant to this committee, but how do people register with SACNAS? We have a website, www.sacnas.org.za, and there's information there. I did, however, think it be appropriate for this committee to understand the registration process that we go through. And as I go through this process, you'll see that it's extremely rigorous, and people might say, why should it be so rigorous and time-consuming to register as a professional natural scientist? Well, the reason for that is very simple. We have a statutory obligation to ensure the people that we register are suitably qualified and are at the level that they should be. So when you get your SACNAS stamp of approval, we let you loose on the country will rest assured that this is a genuine product and not a fraud or a substandard product. So the process is very rigorous. First of all, the complete application gets sent to a professional advisory committee, which would be in a particular field like geology or botany or whatever the natural sciences are that you want to register in. This professional advisory committee assesses the application and makes recommendations to a registration committee, which consists of all the chairpersons of the professional advisory committees and then some other people, who then either approve or disapprove the application. In between, if there's doubt about the qualification and the quality of the qualification of an applicant, it gets sent to the Qualifications Assessment Committee, which consists of a group of experts on curricula and curricula composition. And then finally, the application will either be approved or turned down by council. The process takes about 3 to 6 months, depending on how complete the documentation is or how complicated the case is. Of course, we have the appeal process, like one should have, if you're not completely satisfied with the process. Now, there's something that has not been mentioned in terms of the registration, and that is for people who do not have necessarily the formal qualifications, but are really excellent practicing scientists themselves. We have a route which is called recognition of prior learning, which could enable them to register according to criteria set out for the recognition of prior learning. Now, how do the numbers look? If you look at the slide on the screen over there, there are a few things I'd like to point out here. What I put in the slide are the numbers from 2006 going through to 2012 for the candidate certificated professional registered scientists and the totals. Numbers get very confusing. What I would like you to focus on is the annual increase. From 2006 to 2007, there was an increase of 209 scientists registered with the council, 238, 119 for the next annum. Then there was a more significant increase going towards 2011, 297, and from end of March 2011 until end of 1st of April 2012, we registered 700 additional natural scientists. Important here is the growth. It's about a 17% increase. So far this year, we are heading along the same direction. We'll have another 17 to 20% increase in registered scientists. And that's very important in order to get people on board. So yes, our numbers are increasing. In the next slide, oops, sorry, it went the wrong way. The good news about SACNAS at the moment as well is that we're getting younger. As we're going through the process, the age profile is changing. If we look at the percentage scientists that were 60 plus, you can see there's been an increase over the last, decrease over the last 4 or 5 years, similarly to the age group 50 to 59, and there's been a very healthy increase in the younger age group scientists. Now, at first glance, people say, yes, so what? Well, it is extremely important. I think the science community is well aware that we lost, almost lost a certain generation Many, many older scientists are reaching retirement and are leaving the professions. And it's very, very important that we bring youngsters on board. And these figures do seem to indicate that we are on the right track. From 24%, 30 to 39-year-olds, you're now at 30% going into 2012, and it's increasing. That's encouraging, because that's really what South African science needs. So we're quite excited about that. Now, before I get totally slighted on the gender issue, we're also getting prettier. We're not only getting younger, we're getting prettier. And, yes, 27% of registered scientists female is extremely low, and it's not near where we should be. However, what is encouraging is that there's an increase in the percentage females. What is the reason for this lag? I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure there are people who've studied it in quite some detail. How does one overcome it? Well, bring more girls and young ladies into science. That's not so easy. But we're getting there. It's improving. We haven't answered the question yet why it's all male choir singing to you today, Madam Chair. But I'm not going to dodge it. One of the things that we inherited is the composition of the council. And we only change that composition every 4 years according to our legislation. So if you look at the composition of the council, it is very much male-dominated. One of the more prominent females on the council is actually present, although it is not as an official council delegate, but rather as a person who is involved with PST. So we're not 100% all male. We have a hidden person from DST who's singing with us, I hope. But it is a problem. But yes, the council is getting younger and is getting prettier. The demographics, again, you will see that it's been white dominated throughout. But from 2006 to 2012, there's a move in the right direction. The black scientists coming in start forming a higher percentage. And if I show some of the later slides, you'll see that particularly among the young scientists registering now as candidates, it's predominantly young black scientists registering. So we're moving in the right direction. But it takes time. If we look at the numbers as 1 October 2012, there are now 369 certificated natural scientists on the book. It's a 28% increase this year. Very, very, very encouraging is 453 candidate natural scientists, a 46% increase in these youngsters just in this year. And most of them are black, and there's a huge number of females, probably 50% of them female as well. So that's encouraging. Which brings us to 4,500 professional natural scientists, just over 5,000 in total. By the end of the financial year, we'll be pushing 6,000. I think one of the questions that also comes up are, what are the fields of practice that we've been talking about? There are 18 fields of practice, and present most of our scientists are registered in the league table that you have on the board there. You can see 28% geological sciences, and another 11% earth sciences, so approximately 39% of our registered scientists come from geology and the earth sciences. There's a very good reason for that. The geologists themselves have found the council to be a very, very handy place to assist them in vetting who the people are that should be working on mines and should be making mineral asset evaluations and the like. And encouraging is that it's recognized internationally now. The International Union for Geological Sciences has approached our council to assist them in professionalizing geologists worldwide, similar to the way that engineers are professionalized worldwide. South Africa is proudly taking a leading role in that particular sphere. About 10% of our registered scientists are environmental scientists. It's not anywhere near enough. I think the environmental scientists really need to be regulated much, much more carefully. If you speak to any knowledgeable person about environmental impact assessments and some of the disasters that are happening there, it really, really becomes important to clamp down on the way the environmental scientists conduct their business. I'm proud to say that of the people that are registered with our council, so far we've not had a single disciplinary case against them. They all seem to be conducting their business meticulously. It may not be the case for the fly-by-night that are not registered. Agricultural animal science, about 16% of our registered plants currently are in the agricultural-related sciences. Chemical science, ecological science, and in the other fields of practice, many of them are freshly emerging. I have not listed them all, but it would include water care science, botany and zoology, and that kind of thing. What are our current projects? Yes, we are to strengthen SACNAS to make it more relevant. I hope that part of the reason why we are here today is because we've embarked on that process. There are definitely some aspects of the Act that need attention, so we're in the process of rejuvenating the Act, constantly revise the rules, it's passing stone and it's continually evolving, enhancing our visibility. I think we try to educate the scientists and the public about the importance of having professionals do this kind of work. We've commenced with continuous professional development. Policy has been in place and it's implemented in trial rollout in geology and animal sciences. We're modernizing our registration process to cope with increases, streamlining the admin, and a very active marketing campaign. We improve our services to our registered scientists. Personal indemnity insurance particularly seems to be very popular. It's a project that we've embarked on. We support conferences, symposia, regional sessions, awareness campaigns, as well as employment opportunities through our website. In the future, we would like to attract involvement in the development of the curricula. We started to that, I think we can improve. We will get involved, more involved in accreditation training centers. There's been a number of requests by the centers for us to assist in their accreditation. Step up media coverage, Facebook. The first group of students I spoke to, the very first question that the student asked us, are you on Facebook? At that stage we weren't, we are now. And I think very important to engage the youth, and I think I'll stop there now. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Professor Becker. We will now allow I don't think there are any additions from there. I don't want to see. There are no additions from there. Okay. We will then allow members to ask questions if there are any questions that they would like to ask you. What we will do, what we usually do, we allow members to ask you your questions, and how you respond to them in terms of who responds and what depends on you. So, but what is important is that so that we don't respond in one question when it's being asked, but we'll take you judge all the questions. I now will hand over. I've Honorable Smith, Honorable Lagie, and Honorable I can't pronounce her name. I'm being yes. Yeah, Honorable Lawrence, yes. And then the last person to ask questions, 1 and 2, would be myself, so that you then.
Thanks, sir. Thanks for the presentation. I must say, before we started, just kind of when I got this presentation, you know, what is this body all about? And I was a trifle hostile, maybe, to the notion. But I'm being a bit more open-minded, so let's just go. I think maybe it'll be useful just to give us a brief synopsis of your structure, who you are, you know, your staff, your budget, your place in the system of S&T, etc. Just some locational things like that. I'm not sure I understand the logic, and this is part of the hostility I had to the notion. I don't
and it doesn't really matter whether Mossad or not anyway, it's just trying to understand it. But the logic of having a single structure or a single body representing all natural sciences. I can understand, for example, an association of geologists or an association of animal husbandists or whatever you're going to call them. But the single body with a single code covering everybody, I still can't get my head around it. So it seems to me in my head that everything will be so generalized to cover everybody, or you have to have lots of little sub-specializations. But maybe I misunderstand that, so speak to that. As I understand it from the presentation, the people who are required to be registered are those, rephrase that, the Act prescribed that certain work cannot be done unless you're registered. Could you speak to that? What kind of work can't be done unless you're registered? Maybe also go to the issue of who has to register. It's still not completely clear to me. It seems to me that the people who do certain kinds of work, yes, that's one category. Then it's people who, I think, but I'm not clear, are in the consulting industry, because you regulate the fees they can charge. So I'm thinking to myself, this is governing people who are out there acting as consultants to the body, to the general public, or to the industry. They're not necessarily employees of companies drawing salaries or involved in natural scientific activity within those organizations, but I could be wrong. And what is the position of people who are, for example, teachers, the university lecturers, the professionals, the research fellows, etc.? Are they engaging activities that require registration? The 18 fields that are covered, are they exhaustive, or do they get added to, as you mentioned, water science, water management science or something. Do you add these fields yourself, or does the statute change? I was also a bit struck by some of the fields. I can understand where you're serving a professional, I can understand the need sometimes for some sort of regulatory environment for certain activities one might engage in. If I'm, for example, I'm a mathematician, and I'm designing algorithms for some communications company, why should I be regulated? Why can't I charge them 10,000 rand an hour if I want to, instead of, you've got fees here, prescribed fees. Why can't I charge what I like? I put myself in the open market. Anybody buys my services for whatever price. Why must you tell me I can't earn a higher income? I might have misunderstood the way you do it, but that's what it seems to me. Do any of these natural scientific fields have their own professional bodies that regulate their behavior, in addition to what you do? So is there a geologist society? Is there a, all the other ones are? Do they have their own professional bodies? And if so, do those bodies regulate conduct in any way? And if so, again, how does it relate to what you do? I was struck by the number of natural scientists registered. To me, it's a very low figure. I know you show increases every year, and the last year only was the most dramatic increase you've ever had. But still, 5,300 natural scientists seems to be a low figure. What is that as a percentage of all the natural scientists that we have, whether they're registered or not? What percentage does that comprise? How do you? I'd imagine that you're a very small body. How do you get in a position where you help determine standards of training and curriculum? I mean, if a whole bunch of universities, they're all teaching some field, mathematics, say again, why would you come along and tell them what kind of curriculum is appropriate? And they're all social institutions, and they all get together and all curriculum. Well, what is your role in determining curriculum?
Certified
and then professional. Candidate would be somebody who hasn't yet qualified to practice in some way, and they just come through the initial stage. Then you get certified, then you get professional. Here you, the candidate's stuck in the middle. It's just a strange concept to me. You talk about the public. One of the reasons to register is to be recognised by the public. And you gave that example of this EIA process from there. then you made a very interesting statement. You said, at the side we say, no work identified under the Act may be done by persons in the present. When you said you're not being strict about it, do you have the discretion to decide whether to be strict? I mean, if the Act enjoins you to do X, are you in a position to say, no, we won't do X, we'll do X minus something? Which seems to be what you're saying.
Yeah, the explanation is not really much convincing, because you didn't tell us that what are you doing to encourage to bring women on board. So you didn't really tell us that. Do you have a plan to ensure that since the law requires that, is there something that at the end you do to ensure that you bring women on board? And on page 4, yeah, you said you are representing professionals and community. Now, we want to know, in the community, is there a specific group that you are targeting, or is it the community in general? If it's in general, we want to know the how part of it. What is your approach to ensure that who benefit what and who? And you indicate also the students that you have and the majority of black. But we are interested in knowing from where are they, where are they coming from? Yeah, because we are more interested in also developing the rural part of South Africa. Yeah, and your project list. At one slide you said the relationship that you have with the Department of Science, the working together relationship. But now on the projects that you indicated there, is there anything that you are doing together? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. One question on the first, which was not a presentation, Professor Casey. You've mentioned you review qualifications and you have a serious concern regarding the variance in qualifications from people from different institutions, I presume universities. What are you doing about it? How do you deal with it? How do you rectify it? Obviously, it must have also something to do with the curriculum development, but I'll get to that question later. On page 6 of the presentation, you've mentioned third bullet, to ensure the function now, to ensure maintenance of acceptable standards of trading. How do you do it? How do you determine those standards, and how do you make sure that those standards are met? On page 8, the second bullet is that the sciences must be protected from the influences of money and politics. And then you went ahead and you used an example in North Carolina. Do you have examples in South Africa? And how do you deal with it? On page 16, You dealt with the bottom part of that table, the annual increase, and then during 2009 it was 190, and then it dropped to 110. Why did it drop? And I didn't understand, you referred to a 17% increase, but yet the increase from 2011 to 2012 is quite considerable. Could you please explain? Have I misunderstood you or what? If one compares slide 16 with slide 20. You referred to the total of 5,384, but on the table it's 4,938. Is that the increase between April and October? Is that the increase? So it's quite considerable at this during this year. Okay, then on page 22, the bottom bullet, educate scientists and the public. Honorable Smith referred to the fact that he doesn't know about your existence. We are not aware of members of the public of this. It connects to your bottom bullet on the next page, the marketing campaign. Could you please give us some more details? What project do you have? And how do you deal with the marketing campaign and also the education of scientists and the public? Do you go to schools? How do you educate the public? And then page 23, dealt with that. And then also on page 25 regarding the curricula, how do you deal with this? Honorable Smith did touch on the curricula. But do you interact with the Department of Basic Education, or are you only referring to curricula taught at universities and higher education institutions? Do you have curriculum developers on your staff? Where do you get your curriculum knowledge or development knowledge? Were you involved in the current curriculum, for instance? Because it's curriculum development is a science in itself, so we would like to know more about this, because it's a huge shortcoming in our country that we don't have a national curriculum development unit. We used to have such a unit in the past, and the Department of Basic Education announced 2 years ago that they are planning to do so, but we haven't heard from them yet. So we need, it's a very important bullet that, so we need some more information on that as well. Thank you.
I do have some comments on some of the things. I'll go from page 8 to page 8 in the slide. This is an area which I'm very fond of. And I was a bit taken aback when it's then being said in area of the world in terms of silence, recognition of silence. The question for me, where then do you identify with, and is the public aware that you have this, which is very, very, very important? I would make a humble request in some of the slides. Maybe through when you are not here, you can email that to the secretary of the committee, that you make a breakdown of the numbers. Yes, I saw the other gender. I think one member did ask about where they're coming from. I think that's clear. And we're very much interested in class gender. Because it indicates to us that in this number, how many of those are foreign nationals? I'm raising that because we don't want the community to be excited as we're under the impression that it's all South Africa. And the nationals, if there are nationals, foreigners,
the countries, the gender also is going to be very important. I'm happy that you have, so in all the slides that you have got numbers, yes, I'm happy that you do indicate that you have inherited the structure. When I was representing the committee in one of the entities where they were launched in PE, it was a room full of white, old, rich males. And I challenged them without any fear of contradiction or favor. that with the understanding of the system of education that we are coming from, why the room is full of that. And I said to them, it's your responsibility to go down. Why do you have the office in Summer Strength when the majority of young people in PE have been excluded in this, in some of this? It has got its own ideological history. And I think as members of the committee, some of us were not apologetic of saying that because we want that to be corrected. And I am happy. That's why the issue of the recognition of prior learning makes me really feel that you are. The last one, and it has been addressed by, which is very important, which I think the Honourable from the DA did raise it. I am coming from a constituency area whose development in terms of human settlement is at a standstill because of the environmental impact assessment. And I want, maybe not today, I'm happy that I have really come across people who can then be able to explain. Let me make an example without wasting any time. Municipality is refused to build houses because there is this area that has got natural whatever that must not be touched. Houses may be built around or relocate people to an area which is about 50 kilometers from where they have grown up. And the issue is, no. It is the result of how are we really to know, as the members of public and public representatives thereof, when some of our constituency areas and municipalities and provinces are unable to implement our developmental agenda in some of the areas precisely because of this. I'm happy that you are here so that we are able to make a follow-up, because I am a layman. Majority of us here are laymen in terms of this. And I am saying here, and until I am, I will say it's an allegation, that this EIA is being used. I'm saying it's an allegation to frustrate public representatives, irrespective of the political agenda. I mean political party, because I don't want to be accused as if it's only the African National Congress that is being, because all of us here, as you see, we may have constituency offices, constituency areas in the most remote areas, rural areas, and it is because of this. I'm going to go back to PE. I'm going to try and get this report that frustrated me. I couldn't read it. I couldn't understand. And the development in that area is at a standstill, Professor Beck, because of this. I think we have made the greatest, this is my day, because this has always been an area that is frustrating me. So if you can really be able to assist us in that. The last is your relationship with the Department of Higher Education and Training, that you are trying to check. What is then your, because I heard you talking about the Council of Higher Education, but you didn't talk about your relationship with the Department of Higher Education and Training, but you can't talk about Department of Higher Education without the Department of Basic Education, because at the end of the day, that's there. So it's I think for me, it's one of the, it's not that simple, but it's one of the worker-friendly presentations. Pardon us, it's one committee that asks questions. I always make a joke and say, people say, no, it's peace in that committee, but we don't fight about tenders in this committee. The tender goes to what? But you have raised something that is very important that I think the Honorable Member from DA is asking, that don't give us lessons about outside the country. Give us lessons about our country, because we are members of the, we represent Parliament, and therefore, if there are areas where there are challenges, so that we are able to understand. With those, I thank you very much. We'll allow you to respond, but feel free, don't feel intimidated about our questions. We ask quite a number of questions. We are happy today, but I think there are quite few. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I'm going to start with one or two things, and then Dr. D'Arcy, Mr. Govender, and Dr. Becker will also respond. I think the first question is the big why that was raised by Mr. Smith. The structure of having one act that deals with everything offers a certain difficulty because we cannot also put our hands on all the curriculum. So we have accepted, one, is that the act is an enabling act, and two, that this is really a federation of persons who practice in specific fields, which also means that we rely on the people who are experts in those fields to look after their domains. That means that we have people on at professional advisory committees for each of the fields who come from the academic environment and who also come from the science practicing environment, which might include the CSIR, the NRF, or people in private practice. So each of these fields has a professional advisory committee. They assist us in looking at the curriculum. What do we do in terms of curriculum? Up until the last council, the curriculum structure was very rigid. It said you had to have so many subjects, four subjects in the first year, and it was pretty rigid. That rigidity excluded many South Africans from being able to be registered. So we revised the system, and we said in the first year, two subjects in the basic sciences, up to 70% in the basic sciences, and then life skills sciences for 30%. We took this on into the second year, 80% in the sciences, 20% in life skills, 100% in the fourth year. We went to the department, we went to the Council of Higher Education and discussed it with them. We discussed it with SACWA. And everybody was very agreed that we had now opened the system a little bit more to be able to accommodate other people. An example would be Geology 1 was not recognized as a first year subject. And now it is recognized as a first year subject. And there are other subjects as well. What we also did is we assess people not only on the degree that they present before us, but also on their package of competencies. So it might be that a person has graduated in a particular field and then acquired a certain competency in another field and has convinced the professional advisory committee that that person has those competencies in that field. It goes to the registration field, we double check, we triple check, and then we would say, fine. It looks to us as if you can be registered as a professional person in that particular field. So again, we've opened up and widened the system. I'm not going to talk about the budget. Dr. D'Arcy will talk about that. Dr. Becker integrates very much with higher education. But what we've also done in this council is formed a liaison with the deans of science of all the universities. And we have a representative on our council co-opted from the deans of science, which means that we have a direct interaction with them. We go to the universities, we go to the technicons, we go to those universities that are giving us particular problems in areas and have a discussion with them. We're not going to discuss particular universities. I don't know if that is what you want. But an example would be, some universities have called a degree a science degree. And when we look at it, we find they have two modules in the first year, maths and science, maybe, or maths and chemistry, and the rest is made up of topics that are not scientific, that are a science in their own right, but that are not a natural science. For example, it might be archaeology, it might be physical geography. But it's not a practicing natural science. And that makes some difficulty for us to say that this person is a geographer in the physical sense. I think I'll stop there, and then I'm going to ask Dr. D'Arcy to talk about the money. That's an important point, because essentially we are independent.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I am going to just touch on a few of the areas that have been highlighted as questions and try to respond there, and then my colleagues will go into any areas that I leave out. Since Professor Casey has already prompted me to talk about money, let me just make a statement that the Council, in other words, the South African National Professional Council, does not today to receive appropriations, in other words, does not receive public funds from the fiscals. So what we do, we use monies that are paid by the members, in other words, the professionals who register into the council. And so all the funding that is done to do the administration and everything emanates from those funds. And some of them, of course, we invest and we get a little bit of income from the investment. So that's generally the picture of where the monies come from. Although we are in discussion amongst ourselves, and we are planning also to include the DST, because we believe that in order to do our work more effectively and more efficiently, we need extra funding for the organization. But I will leave it at this point, because today we aren't receiving those kinds of funds that come from the public. I do want to talk a little bit about the concerns about the low figure of registered friends that was raised by and also the issue of gender. I do want to draw the attention of members to the fact that the council, what it is actually a reflection of our current and historical educational system in South Africa. Because in order to have a person to be a scientist, that person must be groomed from as grade 7, that this person has gotten mathematics, which is the basis for training scientists. And there is no person who can be trained credibly to become a scientist if he has no mathematical background. So math and science has been a very, very soft spot for the South African education system, which therefore has meant that there are very, very few people who choose science as a profession, whether you are talking about an engineer or a chemist or whatever. Also, our historical background in terms of education is just that science has not been prominent amongst that have gained access to, for example, if I can make, for example, an example of engineering. All the historically black universities did not train engineers, which means that the people who come up to become engineers now would have been trained at Fetts or some other white university, which would be something that is relatively recent. And therefore, you tend not to get blacks, and you also tend not to get women in science for historical reasons. Unless we begin to deal with the challenge of education, shall we be able to get a respectable drive to get more scientists in South Africa, which is actually very important, because we are lagging behind internationally when we compare ourselves with other nations, even nations that are much lower than us in terms of the GDP and in terms of development. We still are lagging far behind in terms of scientific training. And that is a challenge for not just this council, but it's just a challenge for the nation. Historically, women have not been attracted to science. I don't know why, because even the figures show that whether you're talking black or white women or whatever gender or whatever race, you will tend to find that there are more men, and things need to be done to throw women into the science. But also the registered number do not necessarily reflect the situation in the country. Because if I may make an example, if you've got a nurse
somebody who is trained as a nurse, but that person is not practicing as a nurse. So that person is not necessarily required to register under the nursing council. So the same scenario pertains to us. People who are not only trained as scientists, but if they are not practicing science, and who may be somewhere, maybe they may be working as members of parliament, or they may be making anywhere. So those people do not come into our office, so they consequently do not get registered. And therefore it is very difficult to estimate whether that 4,500 registered scientists, what percentage do they make of the total number of scientists that are trained in South Africa, which is very difficult to get that one. But our own estimation, as we talk amongst ourselves, we believe that we have not yet hit 50% of the number of scientists who are registered. In other words, our figure is a gross underestimate of the number of people who are registered, who are scientists. There has been an issue about how do we protect the public, do we educate the public, and whatever. I think that what we should say in that regard is that the very existence of this council is to ensure, number one, that scientists act in an ethical way. Okay? I cannot, for example, if I deal with waste chemicals, let's say I work for a chemical company, direct that those chemicals must be go and be dumped next to your house because of the health implications. Okay? And therefore, in that way, we are protecting the public. Currently, there is a debate about fracking in the Karoo. Okay? Environmental impact scientists have to come up to say what impact will this sort of activity have on the general public. And so that's the way in which we see ourselves, we see this kind of body being protective to the public, okay? Because the general Joe, who is a member of the public, may not know the long-term and short-term implications of the mining that is going to happen in the for example, if I may end up here and keep to my other colleagues. I grew up in an area where large numbers of people, for the sake of their economic activity, they had to go to them to be in the mines, to work underground, okay, in the mines. Because of the fact that they were not protected, there was no care around them. Many of them developed diseases that were related to their occupation. These are called occupational diseases. And I do think that organizations such as us, such as the Health Profession Councils, should be very encouraged to ensure that they play a very pivotal role in protecting the public so that the public does not get abused. Because science can be abusive if there are no ethics that are strong to protect the public. Science, unfortunately, was the reason for the existence, for the happening of Nagasaki in Japan. Okay? But if there was an ethical scientist who was able to guide government, Nagasaki and Hiroshima would not have happened. And so science is very important in our profession. But also science can be distracting. It needs to be controlled by ethics. And that is why an organization like ours has to be in the forefront of ensuring that scientists act in an ethical way.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm going to address the issue that you raised around the environmental issues, environment versus development. But before I do that, I just want to clarify, and I think the Executive Director will go into greater detail relating to the question from Honorable Smith about the structure of faculty. I think from the presentation you've seen, the stats have been mainly about registered members. Besides the registered members, there is a council that is appointed by the minister to oversee the affairs of SACNASP. And that council is made up of representatives from various constituencies, universities, academia, the state, public entities, and voluntary associations. And I think Professor Becker will go into the detail and the composition, which is what we represent here today. The second arm of that is the actual administrative office and the staff that you requested and you inquired about. And, of course, the third leg is all the registered members, which statistics you've seen on the screen. And
but I think what's important to take off from where Professor DRC left,
our drive must be to use science for the benefit of society. While it's embedded in scientific principles, in understanding the science in the various fields of practice, at the end of the day, it must be to benefit our society. And if you look at industry, and the president of SACNASP indicated earlier that industry has been driving the registration of their employees. Industry has realized that without registration, they could be up for legal liability if there's a challenge on a project and a person who is in the field is not registered with a recognized body. There could be financial liability issues and, of course, reputational issues, which could cause delay of projects or even cancellation of certain developmental projects if individuals working on those projects are not accredited with a recognized body. So to minimize those risks, industry has acknowledged that there must be an independent body that gives us that assurance. And that is why it's been driven quite strongly from an industrial or industry point of view. Now, coming back to the issue around environment versus development, and it's not uncommon in South Africa to see that environmental studies will hinder certain developmental projects. And I think we need to go back a little bit to understand where this comes from. I'm sure, honorable members, you are aware that one of the reasons why South Africa has one of the best constitutions in the world is because of our Section 24 rights. In Chapter 2 of the Bill of Rights, Section 24 states that all South Africans have a right to an environment that is not harmful to the health or well-being. But the challenge is not many South Africans know or understand those rights. And other rights in the Constitution, like Section 33 and Section 38, give effect to that environmental rights in the Constitution. In other words, the enforcement of the rights and the right to just administrative justice, because environment is a basic human right. But the vast majority of the people don't know that and don't understand what these rights are and how to access those specific environmental rights. So in 1998, to give effect to those environmental rights, our government introduced the National Environmental Management Act, which is commonly referred to as NEMA. NEMA is the Enabling Act for the Section 24 Environmental Rights. And NEMA is very clear in its principles in Section 2 that social issues, economic issues and environmental issues must be in harmony. And in the principles of NEMA, it is very clear that if the environment or damage to the environment cannot be minimized or cannot be avoided, that the developer must ensure that systems management plans are in place to minimize the damage. Because I think we must appreciate that any development, whether it's roads, power lines, housing developments, will have an impact on the environment. And therefore, if we have to stick strictly to the environmental rights in the Constitution, then no development will take place. But to balance that and to ensure there's a pragmatic approach, the principles of NEMA address that issue. So I find it worrying that certain developers would use environment to stifle progress, particularly progress and development that is sorely needed for the upliftment of communities. And in essence, that is unconstitutional and is not in line with the principles of NEMA. Now, but why does it happen? And my understanding, and I'm a registered environmental scientist at SACNASP, and I've been practicing for 21 years, is that the vast majority of our people in our communities don't know these rights and how to enforce those rights. And we have a lot of work to do to get our people to understand. I mean, that's environmental rights. There's a whole lot of other rights in Chapter 2 that many people don't know of. So environmental rights is just one of them. So when it comes to development versus environment, I think it's very clear the principles of NEMA on how those developments must and should be approached. And in registering our environmental scientists and those who are environmental practitioners, whether in industry, whether in consultancies, we ensure that the principles of NEMA are understood and the principles of NEMA are applied so that it does not unnecessarily hinder developments for the wrong reasons. And that's one of the reasons you would see that environmental science is increasing in terms of its numbers as registered members. It's the third largest field of practice because a lot of people seem to gravitate towards environmental science through consultancies in industry, in municipalities, local, provincial and national government. So we want to make sure that those who are practicing environmental science, when we review the applications that come through the professional advisory committee, that all these factors are considered, when it is presented to the registration committee, that we have applied our mind and that the person who is applying in the field of practice for environmental science understands the broader issues in South Africa. And I think I want to leave it there and hand over to our executive director to address some of the other administrative issues and the structure issues around SACNASP. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And be more concerned about time. I'm not trying to intimidate you. The challenge is that we've gone over, and not because of it has been deliberate. It was the first presentation, gone over to the time, some other business of the committee. So in you giving us the brief, in you giving us the detailed information, I'll request you to be mindful of time. I will then, on behalf of the committee, make a proposal to you on how then to you then address some of the issues that you would have thought you would have wanted to elaborate more on. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Fortunately, I'm known to be succinct, so I will go through it very quickly and to the best of my ability. In terms of numbers, how big is the organization in terms of staff? Well, it is really, really small. It's an executive director and an administrative officer with an assistant, a secretary, a PA, and two accounting people at this stage. Now, being so small is part of the reason why we also cannot always address things in the detail that we would like to and to the level that we should be, probably according to the Act. That's why the Council has felt it imperative that we grow, because by growing the numbers, the income grows and the sphere of influence grows, and one can affect many, many of the issues that we should be affecting through that process rather than tackling each one of them individually. So yes, the numbers are still very small. Probably in the next year or so we will more than double them, but it's a process and it takes time. So capacity is a serious issue. That answers your structure. Prof. Casey has addressed the system that we have of voluntary associations being represented through professional advisory committees, and that they inform us on many of the things, i.e. what type of work should be done by whom and that kind of thing. It all comes from this consultation. Additional fields of practice get added from time to time or taken away if they're not necessary anymore. It's a legal process. And there's a process that eventually leads to gazetting of this field of practice through the department, through the Minister of Science and Technology. Our influence on the curricula, again, yes, we've got good interactions with many universities, most universities in fact, but to touch each curriculum is virtually impossible. The way that we've gone about it is to create very good relationships with the Council for Higher Education, and SACNASP is now represented on the Accreditation Committee, which looks at all new courses that are being developed. That's a good place to intervene, because if there is SACNASP recognition required for a particular curriculum, it then gets referred to the specialist groups at SACNASP to assist in evaluating the curricula. And again, they are all practicing, well, not all, but many of them are practicing academics who are au fait with curriculum development and those kind of processes. Again, it's not the Office of FIVE doing it, but our extended network of scientists that assist us in the process. It's not the optimal situation yet, but we're developing. I think that's the important part. The various levels in terms of what they are called, candidate, certificated, again, is one of those things that we inherited. It's probably part of the revision of the Act that is going to be addressed. It was a very fair comment, I thought. Variance in qualifications. Universities are autonomous, and it's difficult to get them all to pull in the same direction. How do we ensure maintenance of acceptable standards? Again, it is through advice from our professional advisory committees. If there are qualifications coming through, and people are with both feet in the industry. Industry will hire people if they're good enough, and if they're not, they won't. And very quickly, patterns can establish around that. And we need to address them, and we have, and we will into the future as well. If there are issues, we take it up with universities, and we see how best we can address it. But it's a lengthy process. There was a question on the actual increase. It was a drop to 110 the 1 year, followed by more dramatic increases. I was not at SACNASP at the time. I've got no idea what the reason for the drop was. I really don't know. The increase subsequently, we like to believe, is the Council's approach to make it more relevant and to be more active and to take things ahead. And yes, the 17% increase represents the number of 700. That was increased from 2011 to 2012. Another 17% increase brings us close to 1,000 this year, and the 450 or whatever it is for this year is along that line. Probably the overall attack of the Council is to have 20,000 registered scientists by 2020, which requires an annual increase of 17%. We believe it's doable. Yes, educating scientists and the public through a marketing campaign. First of all, we need to educate people about the Council, but it's also very important to educate South Africans about science. I think that's probably one of the most important things that the Council must tackle and develop sound long-term plans in how to do this, right from basic education. which is not really in our on our radar screen at the moment because of the capacity problem. But we believe we have a responsibility towards that. I think the mic is telling me my time's up now. We have a responsibility to taking science to the people. The more science-savvy the society is, the more likely we're going to develop science into the future, the more likely we're going to attract youngsters into the sciences. This year we've got 230,000 matrics writing maths. 2008 we had 350,000. That decrease is disastrous for a country. That is really sitting on a time bomb, and we need to find ways to overcome that problem. In terms of gender, yes, it's an issue. I think Dr. D'Arcy has spoken on that. But I'm going to throw one more comment into it. From my experience of 20 years teaching at the University of Limpopo, one of the fundamental problems for women advancing in science is a social issue in the community. Many a young lady came to me and said, "Sorry, Prof, I cannot come and do masters. My parents won't allow me. The labola will be too high. It's not acceptable." And that is the reality. And the person drops out, and there's just nothing you can do. It's a social issue. And I think it's important we take cognizance of that fact. And until we change some of these concepts, they're right or wrong, I cannot comment. I mean, that's a social issue. But that is part of the problem, why we don't get women into science. It is. So, it's worth for the disciplinary committees of parliament, I think. Recognition of prior learning, I'm not going to go into detail now. It's quite an extensive process that we go through, but I'm glad you supply more information should be required, as well as the detailed numbers of breakdown of gender and age and foreigners and all that kind of stuff, and we'll supply that in the next week or two. And that's it, man. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it, and I think we also learned a lot today from the questions that concern people, and definitely from my office we'll do what we can to address them. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. And I do think that this has helped to again remind us and make a wake-up call, so that we are then able to assist the nation and the administration, because science cuts across all disciplines and portfolios in government, and therefore we are mindful of the fact that we have got that responsibility.
Would you please allow me to follow up question in my time? I will be very brief.
Very brief.
I was thinking to ask a question on fracking. Dr. Darcy referred to fracking. Mm-hmm. It's currently a huge issue in our country. So I would like to know, and you specifically state the current projects educate scientists and the public. Now, you made reference to fracking. Now, I would like to ask you, are you going to get involved in this issue? To educate the public regarding the fracking issue, the current issue, and for instance, just to finish, the different sciences, there are the agricultural sciences, there are hydraulic sciences, the water care sciences, and the earth sciences. Are you going to motivate those units or sciences to start interacting with each other and come up with a proper education regarding this huge issue? Thank you, Chair.
I'll take a chance on this one. We have invited a prominent South African scientist to address us twice already on the issues of fracking, and he has highlighted the problems that we experienced in the United States and in Canada and elsewhere. And we will probably initiate a strategy to look into this in a scientific way. It's not directly the responsibility of the council, because we do the registrations. But in the process of doing those registrations, we also need to take cognizance of what the real problems are. As Mr. Govender mentioned, there's the environmental matters. As you've mentioned, that there's the agricultural matters as well. And also there are the people, the social people that are in the area that need to be affected. So I think I'm going to stick my neck out here to the Department of Science and Technology and say, this is probably something that we need to tackle together. And in some way, we can improve our relationship, not that we don't have a bad relationship, but we can have a common goal and we can have a common problem. So I don't have the sanction of the council or anybody to say that. It is a proposal that I'm making that we can approach science and technology and see if we can find some common grounds to reach out to the people.
No, thank you very much. I do think that we have come to the end of the section, but there are very profound areas that have been raised which are of very importance and fundamental for the history of this country, the issue of education, educating South African community and citizens about science, and therefore the Department of Science and Technology is here and some of its entities, the issue of the science weeks. I know that there are always science weeks. Are we really doing what we are then supposed to do? The second one is the project of the Dinaledi schools with the Department of Basic Education, where science and technology assist there. So it's quite a profound presentation for me, because some of the issues that you are raising is not only social, Professor, it's also ideological, the issue of why women and you know, so it's something that broadly we need to, I will make a proposal to say the department, through the Department of Science and Technology, as the committee, we will communicate to them on some of the information that we think we need, but also feel free to break down of some of the areas that we needed. The committee secretary is here, the department is here, you will know, but you will understand that from time to time we are a disciplined committee, but as members we'll want to communicate with you individually. If you think that we're going overboard as an independent, feel free to come back to the leadership of the Department of Science and Technology and to raise some of those issues. We are public representatives. We have got an interest. There are things that we have raised. But majority of us here are not scientists. But well, I'm a nurse by profession, so we can't separate that from... But thank you very much. We will release you, because there is a committee business that we need to attend to. We are late, in fact, before 1 o'clock we should be done with that. The liaison officer will remain. The department knows who remains and who is to leave, but we will give you a minute to leave us in peace.
Thank you for the invite.
Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's been a pleasure for us to address you this morning. We've thoroughly enjoyed the ambience that has been in this committee, and we look forward to being in contact with you and working with you up front. Thank you.
When you come unprepared or ill-prepared, rest assured that we do... give matching orders.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
A minute, because we are running out of time. Can we? Sorry for harassing you. Pangisani, ladies. Pangisani. Those that are not to be with us, they can...
Honourable members, can we try to resettle Renee and the Thank you very much. I do hope that we have all got the can that be order. Honorable Tunica, can we then start, honorable members, with the next? We have. I must understand that we all received the report for the consideration by the committee. On the project review. And what then I think is going to be important is that is there areas wrong with it? First, I think that we do need a quorum. We are 50+1. So I think that's very important. Number two is that if there are any comments, additions that members would like to make, can they do that so that we are then able to assist one another in how then we will then move forward with some of the areas that may arise. So I'm not going to be, I think I'm going to go straight to the point that I will allow you to raise I will suggest that we do that systematically in terms of the pages, so that we are not all over. If members will agree on that, because I don't want us to waste any time. So, if there are any comments on page one, whoever is going to start will then do it in that manner. Take us through in all of your comments until the last one, so that we are then able to assist one another in a systematic way. I will then hand over to you, whoever wants to start. You can't tell me that it's now that you are written the document. Yes, we're on page one. Honourable Peter, no issues. Page two. No issues. Page three. On page three, yes.
I'm not sure. I'm reading page two document. It's not that it's in here.
Can you go to your mind?
The bullets on page three, we refer specifically to establish an astronomy entity. But I would like to ask, is it possible to also include this whole micro-satellite initiative in our country and the urge or the need of the capacity to be developed and established and whatsoever? Renee, could you guide us in, because I didn't pick it up there. Should it be there? We've got the ARMC, shouldn't it be there? Am I wrong? I'm not sure.
Okay, honourable member, in page three, are you suggesting an additional bullet, or is there a bullet that you are correcting? I'm not. If you can just.
I'm suggesting. I might be wrong. Additional bullet where it's specifically stated, but we need some guidance from Renee. I'm not sure whether I am right in this regard, but I don't pick it up.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. the bullet points fall under the heading of planned policy initiatives. Now, that is of the medium-term expenditure framework. So it starts on the at the bottom of page 2. Yes. So the heading is planned policy initiatives over the medium-term expenditure framework, and those are the specific things highlighted by the department in their corporate strategy. So the ARMC is a specific project. The policy initiatives is bullet one. The third one, continue to pursue enhanced investment and cooperation on SDI across Africa and globally. So the ARMC is a project included under what is their phrase as a policy initiative.
Thank you. It's more than only the ARMC. So, thank you. You've answered me.
Which is also our recommendations on page 10.
Thank you. Page 4. 5. Seven, eight,
page 7.
This is just a suggestion that I thought about last night after Shanaz and I had compiled this report. And on page 7, number 4 is expenditure information, and this specifically stated 2011-2012. But earlier in the document, we do state that the committee had reviewed the expenditure performance for the department during the previous financial year, but as well as for the first quarter of the current financial year. So my question to members is then that do you want me to include a paragraph specifically referring to the fact that you have exercised oversight over the first quarter of the current financial year, which I have seen other committees including their BRR documents.
Honourable members, by nodding, you are honourable. You are agreeing that that be included. Thank you. Thank you. Number 8. 9. Page 9. Honourable Smith.
Mine's just a question as to whether this report is strictly on the department, as opposed to the entities within the department. We ignore the entities for the purpose of our recommendations, largely. No, well, I mean, in terms of an analysis of their budgets, their problems, their challenges, all that, we don't deal with that. Is that deliberate?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. So how do we? This is really department focused.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Isaac, you want
no,
to?
No.
Oh,
no.
So yeah, you.
Page 9.
Okay. Page 10. Page 11. Page 12, and in page 12, number 8, our recommendations. No comments, additions, subtractions. Page 13, which is the continuation of our recommendations. Thank you, honorable members. Is there any spelling there? Or some other challenges, I think that those that will be corrected. And by Honourable.
Yeah, I would just like to thank the two, Renee and Shanaz, for a job well done.
We have to adopt it, so could I have the honour of proposing the option?
Hello.
Yes. I was going to go into that. Honourable Smith from the IFP proposed an adoption. Can we get a seconder? Honourable Lai, on the mic. And you state your name and the...
Uh, I'm Ellen Lyne Hendricks, seconding the proposal to from the ANC.
Well, thank you very much. I want also myself on my own voice. As the whip of the committee, I think we have done our work, and I hope we'll continue doing that. And we are really one good happy family. Like any other families, there will always be this and that and that. That wouldn't be, if it was all quiet, it would be very abnormal. But thank you very much. Safe to say that now we don't have a deputy minister for now, and we welcome the new parliamentary liaising officer. Feel free.
Sometimes that we throw our toys, some of us.
You will manage. You'll understand us. But on a very serious note, we are a really one big happy family. Thank you.
Just a small thing. You mentioned that the chair is off ball for the week. This is more than a sort of a minor cold. I'm not even serious. Maybe we could just express our condolences to him, or express whatever we want to express this, or even send him flowers or something. He's sick.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, members. The meeting stands adjourned.